Hi, I'm Blue.
And I'm Gamer Zero.
We're from Gamer Radio Zero, and you're listening to The Tome.
Show.
It's not the show, it's the Tome.
It's the Tome.
Why do you have to ruin everything?
Because
you know?
It's my job.
Jeez, you know, that's it. I'm out of here.
Oh, whatever.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 76. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, get our advice on 4th edition healing surges and the Raise Dead ritual with longtime supporter of the show, Jake. This is the first official advice episode of The Tome. I never really did it before, since there are so many people who know so much more than I did about the system in 3rd edition and how to tweak it. I just didn't feel comfortable telling people things they already knew or knew how to do better than me. But with 4th edition, I get a fresh start, and I thought I'd give it a shot. If you'd like it, don't like it, or have an idea on how to make it better, head over to the forums at thetomeshow.com. Before we get into the segment, I want to remind you that we have our big contest going on. Sinister Adventures, High Moon Media, Myth Merchant Press, Paizo Publishing, Green Ronin, Goodman Games, Sword's Edge Publishing, Pulp Gamer, and Q Workshop are all generously providing you with prizes. But if you're going to win, you have to get to thetomeshow.com and click on the contest button before the end of August. I'm hoping to get you an episode next week giving you all the dirty details of the various prizes you could win. I just have a few things yet to get into place to make that happen. But now, let's head into the meat of the show. Jake and I had a good conversation. We start off giving him a chance to let us know about him and his thoughts on 4th edition D&D. Then we do the first two parts of a series that I'm hoping to do on these advice shows, where I'm looking at some interesting ways to build characters in 4th edition to help people get a handle on the tricks and tips of using the rules to build the character so that it can do the things you want it to do. And then we finish off with a discussion of how to make healing surges make sense in a gaming world that has at least some sense of realism, followed up with a conversation about the Raise Dead ritual and if it's appropriately powered. Okay, I am here today with Jake, who has been a longtime listener of the show. Welcome to the show, Jake.
Thanks.
Jake is here to chat with me as we do our first ever advice show for the Tome. In the past, it's been requested of me that I do advice shows and that kind of stuff, and I've sort of avoided it because it was so late in the game for third edition, so to speak, that I felt like a lot of the listeners probably knew a lot of the tricks better than I did in terms of rules and that kind of stuff. I've never been a fantastic min-maxer and that kind of thing, but with the new fourth edition, I sort of feel like we get a fresh start, and it's really easy for me to grasp the concepts pretty early on and be able to say, okay, this is some ways that this can work. If you're trying to get your head around how to make certain things fit into your game, I've got some advice on how to make that work. And so Jake's going to join us for that. Jake, why don't you take a few minutes and introduce yourself and also let us know some of your thoughts on 4th edition D&D.
Okay, well, I'm Jake. At the moment, I'm not really affiliated with anything or have any projects going, mostly because of my lack of constant time to be able to do anything, but I'm Silence over at the Fistful Comics and Games forums. I got to 4th edition about a week ago. I've been going over it, and I really like it. It's a good edition. It's got a lot of changes from 3rd edition, and I don't see any large glaring problems. I don't see too many small problems. I mean, the biggest thing is some slight suspension of disbelief. You know, you can be stabbed all you want one day, and then you rest 6 hours, and then you're fine. But, you know, it's a game. You have to be able to roll with it and enjoy it. But other than that, I think 4th edition is great. I know that we're going to go into a few more topics with more detail, so I don't want to go into more detail now. So hand it back to you, Jeff.
Okay, great. And one of the things you brought up is that some of the bigger issues that people are having with 4th edition have to do with making the rules work and suspending their disbelief. And because some of the rules make it difficult to suspend disbelief. And so today, some of the things we're going to focus on, or at least one, maybe two, if there's time, of the things that we'll focus on today are going to deal with some of the things that make it hard to believe this game. Specifically, we know we're going to talk about healing surges. And then if there's some time, you also wanted to talk a little bit about the raised dead ritual and how that might impact
yes,
your suspension of disbelief.
That's dramatically different from 3rd edition and really caught my attention there.
Good. So we're going to chat a little bit about those things. But before we do that, one of the things that's been talked about over at the forums, and you can get to the forums at thetomeshow.com, just like Jake mentioned, he's Silence over on the forums. Fistful of Comics and Games, Gamers Haven, and The Tome all share forums. And one of the things that have been talked about over there is let's talk about some unique ways to build characters. Some fun feats to work on and race class combinations and that kind of stuff. So what I'm doing is in my free time, I'm going through the Player's Handbook pretty extensively. And it's a good experience for me, too, because I'm getting to know some of the classes and races a lot better when I'm going through them with this level of detail. And I'm building sort of character concepts. And I'm trying to come up with a focus, sort of a concept, a few words to define what this character is all about to help me guide how I'm going to build the character. But I try not to go with all the most obvious choices all the time. Okay? So, I mean, the obvious choice if I'm going to build a fighter is to make a dwarf. Because a fighter is all about the ability to take damage and to heal yourself quickly and to get out there and stop other people and not be somebody that's going to be bowled over. Well, the dwarves, stat bonuses tie directly into that. The dwarves, dwarven resiliency, healing ability ties it well into that. The dwarf's ability to resist being knocked over ties in well to that. So it's a really obvious choice. So I'm going to try to mix it up and pick some less obvious choices that still fit the theme. The first one that I'm going to look at is a fighter class, but instead of going dwarf, I decided to go dragonborn. And the general concept, the things I'm going to be going for to help build this character are, I want this character to be a guardian, I want them to be able to take a lot of hits, and I want them to be able to control movement on the battlefield. And so those are the things that are going to guide my decisions as I talk about the build for this character. Now, I'm going to talk racial features first and why the racial features are going to tie into this. First of all, Dragonborn get a bonus to strength, which is going to be good for a fighter because that's going to help them, do more damage, which is always a nice thing for a fighter. Although it's worth noting that fighter in 4th edition is less about dealing damage than they were in previous editions.
Yeah, they seem like almost like a meat shield type.
They're definitely character. The meat shield, but they're no longer the I'm going to stab everything through the head kind of guy.
The powers make a melee combat a lot more interesting and a lot less I attack him, he attacks me, do that for 5 rounds, and then you're done.
Right, and at the same time, if you in previous editions, if you wanted to play the character that was going to grab a sword and do a lot of damage, you played the fighter. In 4th edition, that doesn't seem to be the case. If you want to be the guy that grabs a sword and does a lot of damage, you're probably going to be playing a rogue or a ranger. Because those are the strikers, and they have the powers designed to do a lot of damage. Whereas the fighter has powers designed to do decent damage, but then also manipulate the battlefield, help out your party more, and get people to attack you instead of other people.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay, so other racial features that are going to tie into this class, or into this build...
Well, there's the Dragon Breath feature, of course.
Okay, the Dragon Breath, yeah. They've got their Dragon Breath. That's going to be another decent attack. What's nice about the Dragon Breath is that it's an area of effect, but it's also a minor action to use. And so you can attack, move, and use your Dragon Breath all in one round.
And I can definitely see if you're surrounded by a bunch of weak creatures, this can be a pretty important thing, but it does a pretty small amount of damage. So if you're fighting, you know, one to three bigger guys, it's probably not going to be the most useful ability.
But right.
If you're being surrounded by goblins or something, then yeah, it's going to be useful.
Sure. Well, and then you also have the Dragonborn get a bonus to attack when they're bloodied. And as a defender, you're probably going to be taking a decent amount of damage. So that's going to probably come up more often than you might expect. And
definitely.
And they also get bonuses to healing surges, which is going to be good for a defender to help keep them on their feet.
Yeah, the healing surge is, of course, very important to D&D now.
Right. Now, the class features are also going to tie into this. The fighter class feature, obviously, higher hit points. They get more healing surges. These things are sort of essential to being that defender role. I can take more hits. I can heal myself more often. That makes me more, you know, which they need to be able to do because they should be taking more hits. Where the fighter class starts getting very interesting is they have something called the combat challenge, which at first time reading through it, you're like, okay, well, this seems like it's too complex to waste my time, you know, too complex for such a minor benefit. But when you actually start seeing it in action, it combat challenge is actually a very interesting ability. Because what happens is anytime a fighter attacks somebody, that means anytime they roll a d20 versus one of their defenses, they mark that person.
And that looks like it's an ability that looks very interesting. I think you're going to use a lot. I mean, -2 to everybody you attack is going to add up, and it adds a lot of flavor to the game. Because, you know, once you've attacked somebody, they're inclined to attack you back, and you're attacking each other instead of just attacking random people.
Right. And what becomes even more interesting is that you can put some fun combinations into this, too. And it's not just a matter of a -2 if they don't attack you. There are certain situations with a fighter where if I have you marked, you can't do things, certain things. Or if you do, I get a free attack. You know, they can't move away. They can't even shift to get away from the fighter because that fighter gets a free attack.
Yeah, I saw that, and I was looking through those, and I was thinking, you know, once you add on to that, that can be really, really key part of combat for a fighter.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, definitely.
Well, and some of the conversations I've had talking to people about interesting ways to build characters, they said, oh, well, one of the really fun little things to do rules-wise is combine a fighter and then multi-class wizard and build up to fireball. Because when you fireball somebody, you are rolling an attack against all of them. So you've suddenly marked everybody that was in that fireball.
Oh, that's...
Now...
I didn't think about that. That's interesting.
With this character build, we don't even have to do that. Because we have the Dragon Breath.
Oh, yeah, that. Yeah, definitely.
With the Dragon Breath, now suddenly I can hit 5 people at once, and all of them are marked. They all have to attack me, or they take a -2 and possibly get attacked, depending on what they do. So that starts becoming very interesting.
Yeah, that would definitely be very interesting.
Now, the fighter also gets a bonus to either one-handed or two-handed weapons. I think for this build, I'm going to go with one-handed. That way we can combine the weapon with a shield, again, to help boost that ability to take blows, that guardian theme that we're going for here.
Definitely. I like the idea of taking a shield to be able to boost the armor class.
Right. So in terms of stats, I'm just going to use the standard array that's provided in the player's handbook and arrange those stats. I think I'm not going to put the high stat on strength like you probably would in an older edition fighter. I'm going to put the 16, which is the high stat, into con.
Yeah, again, definitely constitution.
Boosting hit points, boosting healing surges.
I'm going to
put the second highest stat, in, which is a 14, into strength. And when you combine the racial bonus from being a Dragonborn, you actually have a 16 strength and a 16 con. So you can still put out a decent amount of damage.
Definitely, yes.
I'm going to give Dex our 13, which is our next highest stat, to, again, try to help with that AC, make you harder to hit. Intelligence kind of is going to be my dump stat. I'm going to put my lowest stat there for a 10. And a Wisdom 11. And then Charisma is where I'm going to put my 12. Again, with the Dragonborn boost, that's going to bump it up to 14. And that's going to help a lot out when I start looking at other abilities, like skills. If I want to, you know, for a fighter gets 3 skills. One of the skills I want to choose is Intimidate. That way I can sort of take a little bit of advantage of that Charisma bonus that the Dragonborn get.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a pretty charismatic fighter with 14 there.
You bet.
Yeah, it'll affect a lot of skills.
And then I'm also going to, for other skills, I think I'm going to go with Endurance. Seems like a natural one for a tough and hardy fighter. And then I'm also going to go Heal, sort of to go with that theme of being a guardian and helping out members of the party. That way, you know, if somebody's in the middle of melee and they fall and they're bleeding to death, maybe this fighter can rush up into combat, can weather a few hits in order to make that heal check to stop the person from dying.
Okay.
So sort of a give them that heal skill so they can be sort of that last ditch, save the day sort of character.
Definitely, yeah. The heal skill will definitely tie into that a lot.
So let's look at powers then. Start off with the at-will powers. We get 2 at-will powers as a first-level character. And so let's just talk first-level builds, and then after we're done, we can sort of talk about what we would look for in the future for this kind of character. The options that we have are Cleave, Reaping Strike, Sure Strike, and Tired of Iron. And so looking at the themes that I have, I'm trying to figure out which ones are going to be the best in terms of helping me be a guardian, control movement on the battlefield, you know, that kind of thing. Tide of Iron seems like a natural one because it's the only one that allows me to actually control the battlefield. I do a little bit of damage, but then I also get to push my enemy. I get to push him 1 square. So I hit him, I do a little bit of damage, plus I get to move him back.
Now I'm thinking, you know, if you can combine that with what some of the feats that say if they move back away from you, if they're marked, I'm not sure how that would work out exactly, but that might come out to an interesting build.
Yeah, I don't know if that would work or not. I'd have to look a little bit more to see if you can use Tired of Iron to push somebody and use that to get an attack because from the combat challenge. Let's look
probably
at combat challenge.
Not. They would probably work around that.
My gut says not, but let's see. Make a basic melee attack against as an immediate interrupt. Yeah, see, I don't think you can do an interrupt for a movement that you force somebody else to do.
Okay.
So, but you still get to control that battlefield a little bit. So if somebody's trying to get past you and get to the wizard, you can hit them and then push them back a little bit to stop them from getting to that wizard. Now they still got to get through you.
Definitely. That would be very good.
And I think the other at-will power that I'm going to look for is going to be Reaping Strike.
I was thinking about that, too. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so Reaping Strike, again, just does a decent amount of damage, right? It's 1 weapon die plus your strength modifier. So it's not a big damage ability, but it's a guaranteed damage ability because this one actually does some damage if you miss. So if I attack and I miss, I still do my strength modifier and damage. So it's sort of a guaranteed hit. Which,
yes, and that's going to be good for fighting one of those guys with 30 AC that they come out of nowhere. And,
yeah, absolutely. You get some of those guys with the really high defenses and you otherwise can't hit them, Reaping Strike is going to be huge. If you're fighting somebody and it's going to be one of those really long combats, a few little hits like that can start to add up pretty quick.
Definitely. If you have a high strength modifier, that can, yeah.
So then our next thing to look at is encounter powers. For first level encounter powers, we have Covering Strike, which does decent damage and then allows an ally to move. Passing Strike, which does lower damage but allows for a secondary attack as you move along and hit enemies along your way. Spinning Sweep, which allows you to hit somebody for smaller damage but knocks them down. And then the Steel Serpent Strike, which does decent damage and slows down your enemy for a while. In terms of trying to stay with our theme of controlling our enemy's movement, I'm going to pass Passing Strike. I'm not going to go with that one because that one doesn't necessarily help with that. That one's more of I want to do damage. Covering Attack allows your ally to move, but I'm trying to control the movement of my enemy. So we're either going to go Spinning Sweep or Steel Serpent Strike. Spinning Sweep does less damage but knocks him down. Steel Serpent Strike does twice as much. Well, does a 2x weapon plus strength modifier damage, so it does more damage. And it slows him down, which means they can only go 2 squares and they can't shift. And what are the odds they're going to be going anywhere at all then if you're right next to them, provoking attacks, opportunity attacks? So I think... Go ahead.
I'm inclined to Spinning Sweep here because you knock him prone and then the guy that's next to you hopefully, you know, kills him on the ground. That makes it really easy.
Yeah.
Have two people fighting.
In terms of setting up other people for attacks, I think Spinning Sweep is the way to go. In terms of, I guess, controlling movement and being the guardian type, I think I would actually go Steel Serpent Strike. Because I get to do a little more damage, which is nice. It's nice as a fighter to do some decent damage. And they're not really going to go anywhere, because if you're slowed, you can only move 2 squares. And if you can't shift, which they can't if they've been hit by the Steel Serpent Strike, then anywhere they go and any movement they make is going to provoke more attacks from you. So nobody's going to really want to go anywhere anyway. So, yeah.
Plus they're marked at that point.
Plus they're marked, right. And so there's lots of things that are going to keep them in place. So they both, I think, control movement on the battlefield just as well. But Steel Serpent Strike is also going to let me do some more damage. But you're right, in terms of setting other people up for attacks, the Spinning Sweep would actually be a really good choice.
And plus, if you knock someone prone, they can't move, so that's even better than slowing them down.
Well, sure, they'd have to stand up, but yeah. Well, good. So then we have one daily power that we need to choose also. Our daily power choices are Brute Strike, which does 3x your weapon plus strength modifier damage, and is reliable, which means that even if you miss, you don't lose it. You can use it again next time. So you get this daily power over and over again until you've hit with it. There's the Comeback Strike, which is also reliable, does less damage. It does 2x weapon plus strength modifier, but it allows you to use a Healing Surge. So this is the let's hit them and then pick myself up off the ground a little bit. And then there is the Villain's Menace, which is not reliable. Does the same damage as the Comeback Strike, but you continue to get bonuses to attacks and damage against that enemy for the rest of the encounter. I suppose in terms of fitting our theme, Comeback Strike seems like a natural choice because it's going to allow me to heal myself and keep myself up longer so I can take more hits.
Definitely. That seems to be the obvious choice here.
Although the Villain's Menace is really tempting just as a long, you hit the big bad guy at the beginning of the encounter and that's going to be helpful, through the whole thing. Doesn't really fit our concept, but is a very tempting choice nonetheless. So, that is the powers for our Dragonborn fighter. Now let's look a little bit at feats and see how we might go with feats for the Dragonborn fighter. Okay, so for feats for our Dragonborn fighter, there's lots of different options. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do to make yourself a better fighter. And there's some things that you can do that are going to make you more Dragonborn-ish, I guess. And I think I want to go try something out that's going to make me feel more like a Dragonborn. Especially with that combination of Dragonborn abilities plus fighter abilities that we talked about before.
Yeah, now, the marking and the...
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, some people, if you want to go more Dragonborn, you might pick up the Dragonborn Senses. Honestly, from what I've seen of 4th edition in play at this point, adding low light vision to a character is not as good as it used to be. It's okay, but it seems like low light vision just doesn't seem as cool as it was in 3rd edition.
Okay, well, I haven't played it enough to be able to know that, so I'll take your word on
sure.
that.
Sure. But what is going to play a big role with our Dragon Breath and combat challenge combination is the enlarged Dragon Breath feat, which makes your Dragon Breath attack bigger. So you can hit even more people and mark even more people in one attack as a minor action.
Yeah, that would be good.
Now, in terms of what to look for when continuing to level up this character, sort of future builds for this character, let's look at what other feats might be a good combination.
Now, I'm actually looking at two right now that look like good considerations for choices. You have the Dragonborn Frenzy, which means when you're bloodied, you gain another +2 damage to damage rolls. So as a fighter, you're going to be bloodied a lot, and that's a big chunk of extra damage if you're doing that on every damage roll.
Yeah, I had the same one in my notes. The other one that I noted was Durable.
I was just about to bring that up.
Durable gives you more healing surges. Now, fighters already have quite a few healing surges, but if you're going to be in the front lines taking everybody all the hits for everybody, being durable is going to help you out, I think.
Definitely, the healing surge is very important.
And then the other one, just sort of to fit the theme, since we haven't made much use of that shield that we picked up, Shield Push, I think, is going to be an interesting choice, because Shield Push is going to allow you to move somebody when you hit them with a combat challenge attack. So if somebody tries to shift away from you as a fighter and you've got them marked, you get your free attack. Not only do they now not get to shift past you, but you've used your Shield Push to push them back one step further away from where they want to go.
Definitely. I was looking at that one myself, and I thought that was a good choice.
Any other feats that you would look at?
I haven't really seen any more feats other than ones that we were talking about that I saw them and thought, wow, that's a really good one. But there's still a few more interesting feats out there.
Oh yeah, there's lots of interesting feats, and those are all just from the heroic tier. We haven't even touched on paragon and epic tier feats.
Oh yeah, paragon and epic tier feats. That's one thing that I like about 4th edition is that they add in the paragon tier feats and the epic tier feats, so that your feats become better as you move along.
Well, I think in terms of game design, it also makes it a lot easier to balance your feats. You no longer have to make sure that every feat is balanced with every single other feat. You just have to make sure that all the heroic tier feats are balanced with each other, all the paragon tier feats are balanced with each other, and all the epic tier feats are balanced with each other. But obviously, the epic tier feats are going to be better than the heroic tier feats, and that's okay.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I didn't like about 3rd edition, is because, you know, you can't have too many feats that are going to be more powerful than another. So, you know, by the time you're at level 16 or something, taking a feat, I mean, there are a couple interesting little things. But for the most part, you're taking a feat and it's not going to matter too much. At 3rd level, you're taking a feat and it's like, wow, I got this whole new ability. It's awesome.
Yeah. So let's look also a little bit at some powers. I just want to highlight a few powers. I didn't write down very much. Obviously, we have 30 levels worth of powers to look through, and I just picked out three sort of along the path that would sort of help fit our focus as a guardian to look at for the future for this character. The first one on my list is the 6th level utility power called Defensive Training, which basically is a minor action. As a minor action once a day, you gain a power bonus to your fortitude, reflex, and defense and will defenses.
Now, what I was actually looking at was it's a level 2 utility, mm-hmm. and it's called Boundless Endurance, which means you actually gain regeneration of 2 plus your constitution modifier when you're bloodied. So that's going to make you a better meat shield.
That's actually absolutely correct. And that was one on my list also, so I'm glad you pointed that out.
I'm stealing them, I'm sorry.
No, that's great, because I I didn't mean to sort of jump back and forth, so that's good. That's a good one, okay. Too. That's one that I would add. And then the other one that I sort of noticed along the path to, you know, help with this Guardian theme is the 19th level daily power called Strike of the Watchful Guard, which does 4x weapon plus strength modifier damage, so it's a decent amount of damage. But it also allows you to sort of stop your enemies from shifting around and moving too much without getting lots of extra attacks from you, which they don't want to do after they just took 4x weapon plus strength modifier damage from you.
Yeah, definitely. It pretty much locks this guy down for the rest of the encounter.
Right, which is going to help keep him away from your enemy or your friends, and it's also going to fit our theme of controlling movement on the battlefield.
Definitely, I can see it hitting the, you know, the big bad evil guy at the end of the adventure here with this, and then he can't move at all, and the rest of your party is hitting him hard, and he can barely do anything.
Right.
And just attack you. So that's going to be useful for that.
You bet. All right. Okay, so let's move on to our second build. For the next class, I just went down the list alphabetically for races, so we're going to look at the dwarf. And again, obviously, the obvious choice for a dwarf is the fighter, but we've already done a fighter. I thought it would be interesting to try to make the dwarf into a paladin. And the concepts that I've built for what's going to guide my decisions for this dwarven paladin is I want to make them a defender, I want to make them a diplomat, and I want to make them a backup healer. Okay, so those are the three things I'm aiming for as I build my dwarven paladin.
Okay, so meat shield, diplomat, and healer.
So the racial features that are going to come into play here are dwarven resilience is always going to be helpful for a defender. Anybody who's going to be out there taking hits for other people, being able to heal yourself as a minor action is nice. Now, I've noticed more and more that the dwarf's ability to heal themselves may not on paper seem like the flashiest racial ability, right? You're not throwing out balls of fire. You're not teleporting. You're not doing a lot of the things that some of the other races that get to do that are really cool. But it's definitely one of the most useful racial abilities I've seen. And when you start saying, oh yeah, I heal, I move, and then I hit my enemy, it starts getting real flashy real fast because people start getting impressed that you're doing so much.
Definitely. Being a minor action basically means that you can do that and still move on with your turn and it barely matters. So that really makes healing during combat a whole lot easier.
Yeah.
That's going to be very useful.
The other thing that I think is a racial feat for dwarves is going to be useful for our paladin is the encumbered speed ability, where basically you can load up your dwarf with all kinds of equipment, and it's not going to slow him down. You know, where other people would be slowed down by being encumbered, the dwarf doesn't. Now, they're already moving a little bit slower than everybody else.
A little bit slower.
But not too much slower. And when you add on the extra armor and equipment and that kind of stuff, it's going to make this character more versatile and able to take more hits and that kind of stuff. It's a pretty good trade-off.
Now, one thing I can see this being abused by is, at the moment, I don't see a limit where, you know, you can only, you, just looking at the rules here, you could give your dwarf 2,000 pounds of stuff on his back and he would move normally. Obviously, that's not the way it would work, but that seems to be a slight loophole there, so...
I checked out the encumbered speed entry for the dwarf, and it says that they can move normally even when they would normally be reduced by armor or a heavy load. There is encumbrance past heavy load.
So at that
point, they would still be slowed down. But they can carry up to a heavy load and it won't affect them.
Okay, I thought heavy load just meant generally.
I'm pretty sure there's an upper limit to what the heavy loaded load is. So, and I don't have the encumbrance chart in front of me. I'm not sure where it's at.
Okay, because I missed my homework there.
Because the index in this book is horrible, so I can't find it on the fly.
Oh, yeah, I've tried finding stuff. Ugh.
But yeah.
It's one of my biggest problems with D&D, trying to find stuff in the books.
Absolutely. I said it in my initial review that one of the biggest problems I have with 4th edition is that the indexes are not good. I figure
Definitely.
Once I get to know the books a little better and the game a little better, I guess it won't matter as much. But for the first, I'd say, year or so, it's going to be an issue. But anyway, moving on with our Dwarven Paladin. Let's look at the class features. Again, we get higher hit points. We get decent number of healing surges, which is going to be good for our defender role. They get bonuses to their defenses. Again, good for a defender. They get the Divine Challenge, which is their marking ability, where they have to attack the Paladin, or they take damage based off of my charisma. So it's not it works a little bit differently than the fighter's marking ability, but still has some
concept.
It has some really interesting
kick to it.
Right, exactly. That ability to still hurt him, which also means I'm going to want to, when I look at stats, I'm going to want to make sure my charisma is fairly high. And then we also have the ability to sacrifice healing surges to heal other people, which is the Lay on Hands ability. This is going to help the Paladin be your backup healer. It's an at-will ability, unlike the Cleric or the Warlord. A Cleric and a Warlord can only heal you a certain number of times in any given combat. A Paladin can heal you every single round during a combat as long as they have healing surges. The difference, though, is that the Paladin is drawing from their own healing surges. So, yes, I can heal you 7 times in this fight, or I can heal 7 different people in this fight, and the Cleric and the Warlord can't do that. But when it's all over with, I'm done. My adventuring day is over, because if I go out and get hit very hard, I'm going to be screwed.
Yeah, definitely. That's a pretty huge ability as one of the abilities that you have, because that basically means that you can heal anyone just about as much as you want as long as you have the healing surges.
Right.
So that's pretty big.
Okay, so the next thing then is, let's look at stats then next. I'm going to put my strength, I want it to be okay, but it's not nearly as important for this character concept as a backup healer and defender. So my strength is going to be my 13. For con, I want it to be decent so that I can take some hits. So I'm going to put my 12 there, but I guess get a +2 for being a dwarf, which puts me at a 14, which makes it not too bad. My dex is an 11, my intelligence is a 10. I'm not too worried about those. Wisdom I want to be high, because that's going to help me in terms of being a healer for some of my abilities. A lot of my powers as a paladin are based off of wisdom. So I want my wisdom to be high so I can actually pull off all of my powers. So for wisdom, I'm going to put my 14 there, take my +2 for being a dwarf, and call that a 16, which is going to tie charisma where I'm going to put my 16. So my two high stats end up being wisdom and charisma, which are going to be useful for pulling off my powers, and then charisma is going to play a role in being a diplomat and being a healer.
Definitely, yes.
So for skills, religion is automatic, which makes sense. And I found that religion has become more useful in 4th edition than knowledge religion was in 3rd edition.
They've cut down the skill list so much.
They cut down the skill list a lot. And one of the things they put into the religion is planes. What used to be knowledge planes is now a religion check. Which on some level, it's a different way of thinking about the planes. But it makes a lot of sense because the planes are, in essence, the afterlife, right?
Yes, definitely.
So it sort of makes sense that your religion would help you know more about the planes. But anyway, an obvious choice is I'm going to take the diplomacy skill. It's going to help me be the party voice and fill that diplomat role, and I'm going to get a bonus from that for my charisma. I think I'm going to put my other skill into – or one of my other skills into insight, which is, again, is going to be good for being that diplomat. I can sort of – that's taking the place of, like, sense motive and stuff like that. So if I'm going to be a diplomat, it's going to be good for me to know if people are lying to me.
Yeah, insight seems like an important skill overall.
Yeah.
Seems like a good skill to have no matter what, even.
Absolutely. And then the other one's going to be, my other skill is going to be heal.
Oh, definitely heal.
Which is a no-brainer if I'm going to play the backup healer.
Yeah, that's obvious, yeah.
Right. So let's go ahead and look at powers then. For first level at-will powers, which are called prayers, my choices are Bolstering Strike, which does some damage and then grants temporary hit points. Enfeebling Strike, which does some damage and then gives the target some penalties. Holy Strike, which does damage and then gets bonus damage. And Valiant Strike, which pretty much does damage. I get two choices for my at-will powers. I think the first one I'm going to look at is, well, if I'm going to be a backup healer, Bolstering Strike seems like the way to go, doesn't it?
It definitely does, yeah.
To give you temporary hit points, it makes me a better defender. I can take more hits. For my other pick, I think, because none of the other ones really seem to fit our defender or diplomat or healer concepts, I'm just going to go with trying to do some damage. Holy Strike is going to do the most damage, but Valiant Strike is going to help make it easier to hit because you get bonuses to hit based off of the number of enemies that are around you. This is sort of the, I'm going to charge into the crowd of enemies. I'm completely surrounded, but I'm holding off and I'm providing that last stand, and I'm getting bonuses to my attacks based off of how many bad guys are around me. So that's probably a more interesting choice, but who knows how often that is going to be a huge deal in a fight. You know, you never know how, as a player, you never know how much you're going to be surrounded by big crowds of enemies. So I think I would go Holy Strike for that next choice.
Definitely, it's the damage dealer. I think that would be the best choice.
Now, for first level encounter powers, we have Fearsome Smite, which is moderate damage, two times your weapon plus charisma, where the target's taking penalties. You've got Piercing Strike, where you're doing the same damage, and you're also hitting hurting other people around your enemy. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, it does, yes.
Yeah, so you're hurting other people around you. Also, Radiant Strike, which is doing just extra damage. It's two times weapon plus strength plus wisdom. And then the last one is Shielding Smite, where you're doing some damage, but then you also grant an AC bonus to one of your allies. I don't know. It seems to me that given the way we're trying to build this character, Shielding Strike is the easy choice to make.
Definitely. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Because you're going to do your decent amount of damage, but then you also grant the AC bonus, which is based off of your wisdom, which we have taken the time to boost up and make more effective. Now, if you wanted to just do damage, Radiant Smite is a good way to go, but we didn't really put a ton into the strength for this character, so it may not be the best choice. And then for our daily prayers, we have three choices. We have On Pain of Death, which doesn't do damage based off of your weapon. It does just a straight 3d8 plus your charisma, and then it does continual damage after that. So it's one of those where I've hit them, and now it's just going to slowly whittle away at them. Use it early on in the combat to be effective over time. Paladin's
damage isn't any small amount of damage, too. That's a pretty big shot there. So
well, right. Well, it has the potential to be a decent shot.
Definitely.
I mean, it's ultimately it's a die roll, right? So your average is going to be around 4. And then Paladin's Judgment is 3 times your weapon plus strength modifier and allows an ally to use a healing surge. And Radiant Delirium is, once again, it's ranged just like pain on Pain of Death was. And it's going to do, again, a 3-day 8 plus Charisma. And it dazes your enemy and gives him penalties. I would say Paladin's Judgment would work in terms of fitting our concept of being a backup healer, because it allows you to heal an enemy or heal an ally. But at the same time, it's very strength based. The attack is strength versus AC. The damage is 3 times weapon plus strength modifier. I just don't know that I can count on it as a good option, because I don't know that I'm going to get to use it, because my strength isn't as high. We didn't focus on building up strength. Radiant Delirium maybe is the better choice, because it's going to do some decent damage and then fit into that defender role, because you're giving penalties to your enemy, right? You're making your enemy less likely to be able to attack your friends.
Definitely, yes.
Okay. So let's look at feats then. If you're going to play a decent backup healer as a paladin, it seems to me that a really good choice of feats is durable. We talked about it with the fighter in terms of the fighter being able to heal themselves, but it's even better for a paladin, because you're using your healing surges not just to heal yourself, but you're also using your healing surges to heal other people.
Yeah, and the healing surges basically mean, you know, you have that many more hit points, and, you know, just it's the concept of hit points for you almost changes into like a pool of hit points for the rest of the team, because you can give your hit points away to whoever you want.
Right.
Pretty much. So that makes the healing surges a lot more useful.
Sure. Now, for the future of this character, I think I want to look at feats like Dwarven Durability. It's going to give me better healing surges and more of them. So again, really tying into that, you know, I think this is where a Dwarven Paladin can shine as a healer, is with their feat choices. And then for powers, let's look at, there's a second level daily power called Astral Speech, which is going to tie in well to our diplomat role that we haven't really done much with, other than take a diplomacy skill and have decent charisma. And so I think Astral Speech is going to help a lot with that. It actually gives a bonus to diplomacy until the end of an encounter, which might allow you to talk your way out of a fight.
Or, yeah, I was looking at that myself and thought that was good.
Or come in useful for skill challenges that would include diplomacy. And there was a sixth level daily power I wanted to look at, called One Heart, One Mind, that is a daily, it's a minor action, and it allows you to telepathically talk to the people, your allies, basically. And that gives you bonuses when you're helping each other out. So tying into that defender and helping other people thing, I think that's an interesting choice to be able to jump in there and help your allies do interesting things, and you're giving them a +4 to do it, whereas if anybody else were to help, it would only give them a +2. I find a lot of the utility powers to be really interesting, because they're doing more than just damage plus an effect, you know? They're doing unusual and interesting things that you may not always think about doing in an encounter.
Definitely. I look at the utility powers, and I've always found them to be definitely the most interesting of the bunch.
And there are a lot of powers to look at that under Paladin that are going to add attacks or add healing or add defense. And there's even some in there that add the ability to do some teleporting and that kind of stuff to get you across the battlefield. So there's lots of good options under the Paladin to help us fit our defender and our healer ideas. As far as Paragon path that I would look at, I think I want to look at the Hospitaller Paragon path for the Paladin. The Hospitaller is going to be the one that's more focused on being the healer.
The quote here says, "I am the healer and defender."
Right.
Perfect.
Which is perfect for the build that we're making. Any last
exactly what you want.
Any last thoughts on our Dwarven Paladin?
Not at all. I think we did a good job with it, and you did a great job with it. I don't really have too much to say about it.
Okay, well, on the next episode then, I'll have two more, or the next time we do an advice episode like this, I'll have two more builds that we'll talk through until we get through all eight classes and all eight races. Let's talk rather quickly, because that went longer than I expected.
Have too much time left.
Let's talk rather quickly about healing surges, skill challenges, and maybe squeeze in some Raise Dead here. Let's see if we can find...
Raise Dead is going to happen.
We'll see. We can be snappy about it, maybe. but let's see if we can squeeze these things in here real fast. I honestly think we can maybe talk about them pretty quickly. Especially Healing Surges and Raise Dead would be pretty quick. So the issue that we have with Healing Surges is that Healing Surges... They make it difficult to suspend your disbelief. Is that?
Yeah, you get stabbed by a spear, take 16 damage, you rest for 5 minutes, you're fine.
Exactly.
Now, the way that you can kind of reconcile this in your mind that I have is healing surges themselves are kind of like a passive form of your hit points. Having more healing surges means that you have more hit points. So that's the way I've kind of tried to think about it.
That's actually really good. Basically, it's saying your healing surges are just another section of your hit points, but you don't have instant access to all of those. So if you take a bunch of damage within this one fight, you're still going down.
Yeah, and that really adds a concept of, you know, being able to take a whole lot of damage in one fight versus being able to take a whole lot of damage over a whole bunch of fights. Having a lot of healing surges increases your long-lasting endurance more than your just immediately being able to take more hits. So
that's actually really good. I think what you have to do for 4th edition and with healing surges to really make sense, and I don't really... I mean, I know there's other people that have talked about doing different house rules and stuff to make it fit better for them. I'm not as interested in that. Let's stick with the rules that we have. But I think what you can do is you can sort of readjust your outlook about what hit points actually represent. And that can also sort of solve some of these issues too. It may not be actual full-on wounds that you've taken.
You know, if I've
taken 10 hit points, that doesn't mean that somebody's necessarily stabbed me with their knife. But it means that they're wearing me down. I'm getting tired. Maybe I'm bruising. Bruising as opposed to bleeding is one aspect of thinking about this. But it could also be that they've somehow put themselves at an advantage in this fight. You know, and so you can almost look at hit points or part of what hit points are representing is who has the advantage in the fight. The person with more hit points has more of an advantage than the other person, so that eventually when you get those hit points down low enough, you can pull off that fatal strike.
I think a lot of what hit points is, it's a lot more mental versus physical, because if you look at the second wind ability, you're obviously not, you know, healing yourself. You're regrouping, getting refocused on this task, pulling yourself together, and then going back into combat. You've It's just how much mental punishment you can take until you start giving up.
Yeah, that's good. And then let's go ahead and skip ahead and look at Ray's Dead real fast, too.
Okay, well, to give a quick synopsis of this, Ray's Dead Ritual costs 500 gold if you're in the heroic tier, and 10 times that if you're in Paragon, 100 times that if you're on the epic tier. It only costs 500 gold, and when you raise someone the dead, they're perfectly good, except for the next two milestones. A milestone is two encounters in which you don't rest between them.
Is it two milestones?
You take minus one to all rolls, so it's not that big of a deal if you die anymore. It's not huge. You have to go out and find the cleric in the mountains of eternity 5 million miles away, go on this epic huge quest. You just go spend 500 gold, do a few encounters, bam, you're back and good as new. So
yeah, it's three milestones, but still. It's only what, six encounters, which is maybe an adventuring day. At most, a couple of days, you know, is the longest you're going to be really impacted by having just been raised from the dead. So, yeah,
that's a pretty big...
Right, it definitely has a very different feel.
And dying, of course, is a lot harder, too.
Right.
Let's not go into that.
Well, yeah. And that's topics that we'll look at for other episodes like this. I don't know. Part of me says this is a pretty big departure from what we're used to. And then the other part of me says, but it fits sort of the cinematic or literary feel that's, you know, different stories and movies and that kind of stuff. It fits that kind of stuff better. You know, this maybe feels more like somebody who's being raised from the dead in a movie.
Oh, really? How do you think that?
I would thought
third edition's version of raising felt more like the movie feel.
When you have somebody that's raised from the dead in a movie or in a book or whatever, you don't get lots of explanation of, well, and they were really haunted by this, and sometimes you do, but it doesn't seem to impact their abilities, right? You don't get the sense that this person is being penalized because of their death. They're not a level lower than everybody else. They're not taking minuses to a bunch of stuff. They're kind of bothered by it for a while, and eventually they just sort of shake it off and they get back to life.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess I see your point there. But one of the things this does is that the entire death system and raising dead just makes dying a whole lot smaller deal than in third edition.
Well, it does for the PCs. And one of the things that's sort of been mentioned, and I don't know if it actually makes it into – it doesn't actually make it into the text of the ritual, but one of the things that's been mentioned is one of the philosophies, I guess, behind designing Raise Dead was that Raise Dead or the gods are only going to allow you to be raised from the dead if you have an important destiny. So it's not like every Joe Schmo out there in the world who – you know, fell off the roof of their barn can go and get raised because they don't have an important destiny for the gods to allow them to be brought back. So I guess if you put that into your setting, then it's only the PCs that are really going through this, that are really, really getting use, I guess, out of this Raise Dead.
Ah, okay. So yeah, I didn't know that. Thanks for telling me.
Well, right. And so and maybe it's their failing for not having that sort of explanation in the text of the ritual. But I did read it on one of the blogs from somebody who wrote on it. In fact, you know, it might have been Keith Baker's blog, so I guess he's a freelancer, but it's a really good way to look at that, you know, and makes that work really well.
Yeah, cuz I can imagine, you know, now some higher class guy dies and doesn't really matter. He has the 500 gold. He goes out, raises himself as new, and you know, as long as he's not making attack rolls against orcs, if he's a higher class guy, he's not. So,
right.
That would affect society hugely, I think.
Oh yeah, it'd be huge. It would break your world unless you make the setting work differently like that. One of the things that I find interesting about it is that it is a level 8. Ritual. So even though it's written for the heroic tier, you know, all the costs and everything that's listed there is for the heroic tier. Your characters aren't really going to be using casting Raise Dead themselves very much when they're in the heroic tier. You know, it's only at the end of the heroic tier that they're going to be casting this themselves, which means you can still have the, if you're going to have somebody raised from the dead, you can still turn it into that quest to find the more powerful priest that can pull this off for you, that kind of thing.
Maybe so, but I mean, it's a huge difference between trying to find a level 8 wizard versus a level, I don't exactly know, but it's somewhere in the teens.
Well, Raise Dead itself was a fairly castable spell in 3rd edition, too. I don't have my books with me.
I haven't really looked at the specifics. It was
fairly low levels, but most people didn't want to be raised from the dead. They wanted the resurrection.
Oh, definitely, yeah. So, level is a big deal.
Right. So that's
yeah, especially at the higher level. Once you know you're level 16 and you die, then you're like, oh, man.
Let's see. Raise Dead in 3rd edition was a 5th level cleric spell.
And let's see, what level did you have to be at 5th level?
At 5th level, you were casting 5th level spells at 9th.
9th? Okay, so it's actually about the same level.
It's about the same.
So, I guess I stand corrected a little bit there, but it does make a pretty big difference.
Yeah, there is a big difference, and I think if you take that setting approach with how your gods are going to treat people coming back from the dead, then I think that solves a lot of the issues.
It does.
And I know some people that have been doing that kind of stuff with their setting, you know, since 2nd edition. So that's not a new concept. It's just not been done officially.
Definitely. And, you know, if you do something officially versus it going around house rules, if you do something officially, then everyone knows. If people are just house ruling it around, then not everyone knows. It's not a concept that's available to everybody. So
right. Well, should we call it there and save skill challenges for another chat sometime? For another episode?
Yeah, this one is starting to get a little lengthy. So
we've been talking for about an hour, and it'll be less obviously when we edit, but then more again when I put in an intro and outro. So this might be a good place to
yes, wrap
stop
it up
for
here.
Now.
Great.
Thanks again for joining us, Jake.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So there's our first advice episode, this one on healing surges and Raise Dead. Now a promo for a little story that could. A new novel coming out called Playing for Keeps that is about superheroes that aren't always so super.
Hi there. My name is Mer Lafferty, and last winter my superhero novel, Playing for Keeps, was the first book to be delivered via audio and PDF podcast at the same time. 20,000 people have enjoyed this novel, and now it's coming out in print. Playing for Keeps will be published by Swarm Press this August 25th. Many of you helped this book become one of the most popular in podcast history, and I'd like your help again. I need to make a splash on Amazon to push my book up the charts and get more exposure. So I'm asking you to head to Amazon on August 25th to purchase Playing for Keeps. Don't think that since I'm hitting print, I'm forsaking the podcasting. During the month of August, I'll be celebrating the print release of Playing for Keeps with several treats. I'm reawakening stories of the third wave, bringing you content connected to the world of Playing for Keeps from hot names in podcasting, like Christopher Lester, Casey Schultz, Matthew Wayne Selznick, J.C. Hutchins, and Matt Wallace, just to name a few. I'm holding a video contest for the song Playing for Keeps, where contestants can win Swarm books, Beatnik Turtle CDs, or a flip video camera. Close to the launch of the book, I'll be re-releasing the PDF, along with all the original comic book art, styled by Jared Axelrod and Natalie Metzger, and an exclusive can't-find-anywhere-else short story called Parasite Awakens. And on the day of, the day when we do our assault on Amazon and make you all heroes of the 25th, you'll have frequent video updates from me letting you know how the book is doing and perhaps some messages from other podcasters. It should be very amusing. So go now to playingforkeepsnovel.com, right now, and subscribe to get the new content, the PDFs, and the video updates. And remember to go to amazon.com on August 25th to purchase the book. I can't do it without you.
Well, okay, there's episode 76. And hey, why don't you email the show at thetomeshow@gmail.com, and don't forget to swing by the forums at thetomeshow.com to tell us, how would you have built the dwarf and the dragonborn differently? Also, you can help the show get noticed with reviews or votes on various sites, but more than that, get out there and tell people about the show. How about stumbleupon.com? It's a tool that I've started to use lately, and if you use it to show how much you like the tome, I would love you for it. Also, don't forget to consider checking out the tome's Amazon store for products discussed on this show and more. The show gets part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the air. And once again, you can find all of this at thetomeshow.com. And of course, the tome continues to work with Fistful of Comics and Games. You can find myself and Ethan from Gamers Haven acting as co-hosts in a recent episode of The Week in Geek. Be sure to check it out. Links for things mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com. This has been episode 77, Healing Surges and Raise Dead Advice of...
The Tome.